Breakfast of Democracy Now. For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
There's still a Hebrew there was not fit for a diseased animal. I have photographs here, and I want you guys to take a look at this, of the cell that he was housed in. This is inexcusable, and it's deplorable.
Several top officials at the Fulton County Jail in Georgia have resigned after a black man held in the jail's psychiatric wing was eaten alive by insects and bed bugs in his cell. We'll look at the tragic death of 35-year-old LaShawn Thompson. We'll speak to his brother and sister, as well as the family's attorney, in a global TV radio news exclusive. Then, as a new study finds poverty is the fourth leading cause of death in the United States, we'll speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer, Princeton professor Matthew Desmond, about his new book, Poverty by America.
This book tries to answer two big questions. Why is there so much poverty in America? And what can we do to eliminate it? And it argues that many of us, those of us that are secure, housed, lucky, we contribute to the problem. You know, we exploit the poor, we segregate the poor, and we support a nation that frankly gives most to families that need it the least.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Sudan's warring factions say they've agreed to a 24-hour ceasefire after 4 days of violence plunged the Northeast African nation into chaos. A United Nations envoy says the civilian death toll in Sudan has reached at least 185, with more than 1,800 people wounded since fighting between rival wings of the military junta erupted Saturday. The true toll is likely far higher, with emergency crews unable to retrieve bodies from the streets of the capital, Khartoum, where tanks, fighter jets and artillery fire struck densely populated urban areas. In a widely shared social media post, architect and Khartoum resident Tagrid Abdin said Monday civilians were being killed in the crossfire and that the fighting could benefit Islamist groups in Sudan.
My only fear is that they come to back to power on the back of whoever wins this idiocy, this ridiculous battle that has civilians caught in the middle, and we have nothing to do with this. I don't have a preference. This is our new normal now.
More than a dozen hospitals have been shut down across Sudan, some of them after sustaining bomb damage. Humanitarian aid groups have suspended their operations. U.S. embassy officials have been sheltering in place after a U.S. diplomatic convoy came under attack Monday. Meanwhile, the European Union ambassador to Sudan reports he was assaulted in his residence in Khartoum. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres strongly condemned the fighting and appealed to the warring factions to cease hostilities and begin a dialogue to resolve the crisis. In Kansas City, Missouri, a white 84-year-old homeowner was charged with two felonies Monday after he shot and critically injured a black teenager who rang his doorbell by mistake. Police say the homeowner, Andrew Lester, did not exchange words with Ralph Yarl last Thursday before opening fire through a locked glass door with a .32-caliber revolver, hitting the 16-year-old twice in the head and the chest. Yarl underwent surgery to remove bullet fragments and released from the hospital Sunday to recover at home. Lester walked free for several days before his arrest. Clay County Prosecutor Zachary Thompson announced the charges Monday before taking questions from reporters.
Was there a racial component to this case, however? As the prosecutor at Clay County, I can tell you there was a racial component to the case.
The 16-year-old Ralph Yarrow had simply rung the doorbell of the wrong address to pick up his two younger brothers. A grand jury in Akron, Ohio, has decided not to bring criminal charges against eight police officers who fatally shot Jaylen Walker, a 25-year-old black man, after a traffic stop last June. Body camera video shows the officers chasing Walker after he got out of his car and was running away unarmed. An autopsy later revealed Walker was struck by 46 police bullets as he fled. Lawyers for the Walker family say that after the officers shot Jaylen, they handcuffed him before administering first aid. Elizabeth Page White is an attorney for the Walker family.
I don't care what he did. But let's be clear. When Jaylen was shot, he was running away. He was unarmed. Those are two things that we know. And for any state official to stand up there and justify what was done to Jaylen, shame on you. Shame on each and every one of you. What we saw happen this week in the grand jury was a miscarriage of justice.
In Indianapolis, two police officers have been indicted over the killing of Herman Whitfield nearly a year ago. Whitfield was an award-winning African-American piano virtuoso who would have turned 40 last October. Last April, his parents called 911 to ask for help as their son experienced a mental health crisis in their home. Officers responded with deadly force, pinning Herman Whitfield to the ground, cuffing him, tasering him, and continuing to press their weight into him, even though he was crying out he could not breathe. The city of Indianapolis and its police department fought for months to block a judge's order that raw videos of Whitfield's killing be made public. Last Friday, officers Steven Sanchez and Adam Ahmad pleaded not guilty to charges of manslaughter, reckless homicide, and battery. They were released on $15,000 bond. A trial for both officers is scheduled to begin in June. Police in New Mexico have released body camera footage showing how officers shot and killed a Farmington resident in his own home on April 5th. The video shows officers repeatedly knocking on a door before realizing they'd come to the wrong address. Seconds later, 52-year-old Robert Dotson appears at his front door holding what appears to be a handgun. Three officers immediately opened fire, killing Dotson. The officers then exchanged gunfire with Dotson's wife, who cried out for help. The officers, who have not been publicly identified, have been placed on paid leave pending a state police investigation. Florida is on the verge of joining Alabama as the only state in the country where a divided jury can impose the death penalty. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to sign legislation this week that would allow defendants to be sentenced to death even if as many as four members of a 12-person jury oppose the decision. Momentum for the legislation grew after the Parkland school shooter was sentenced to life in prison because the jury did not reach a unanimous decision on a death sentence. In other Florida news, Governor DeSantis is escalating his attacks on Disney as part of an ongoing dispute that began when the company criticized Florida's Don't Say Gay law. On Monday, DeSantis threatened to build a prison on state-owned land next to Disney World.
Well, there's, what should we do with this land? And so, you know, it's like, okay, kids, I mean, people have said, you know, maybe have another, maybe create a state park, maybe try to do more amusement parks. Someone even said, like, maybe you need another state prison. Who knows?
Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has proposed increasing the debt ceiling for 1 year in exchange for sweeping budget cuts that would likely result in less federal money for housing, education, health care and environment. McCarthy also pushed for tougher work requirements for recipients of SNAP, that's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and to expand domestic mining and fossil fuel production. McCarthy outlined his plan in a speech at the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street.
Before we borrow another dime, we owe it to our children to save money everywhere. Our proposal will examine wasteful Washington spending and executive overreach in all forms.
The White House slammed Speaker McCarthy's proposal, warning it would impose devastating cuts on families and take health care and food assistance away from millions of people. The Republican-led House Judiciary Committee, led by Jim Jordan, held a field hearing in New York City, where Republicans repeatedly attacked Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, claiming the DA pushed, quote, pro-crime, anti-victim policies. The hearing came just weeks after Bragg filed criminal charges against Donald Trump. The focus of the hearing was on what Republicans described as violent crime in New York, even though it's one of the safest large cities in the United States. The New York Daily News reports the homicide rate in Ohio, the home state of committee chair Jim Jordan, is 73% higher than the homicide rate in Manhattan. This is committee chair Jim Jordan.
Their stories are emblematic of a city that's lost its way when it comes to fighting a crime and upholding the law.
Democratic Congressmember Jerry Nadler of New York blasted Jim Jordan for holding the hearing in New York and for attacking DA Alvin Bragg.
The chairman is doing the bidding of Donald Trump. Committee Republicans designed this hearing to intimidate and deter the duly elected district attorney of Manhattan from doing the work his constituents elected him to do. They have demanded access to the inner workings of an ongoing criminal case, information to which they know they are not entitled. They have perpetuated the anti-Semitic and racist tropes that Mr. Trump has directed at both the prosecutor and the judge in this case. They are using their public offices and the resources of this committee to protect their political patron, Donald Trump. It is an outrageous abuse of power.
In other congressional news in New York, Republican George Santos has announced he will seek re-election for Congress in 2024, despite growing calls for him to resign over his extensive lies about his background during his successful 2022 campaign. The FBI has arrested two New York residents for allegedly running a covert police station in Manhattan's Chinatown on behalf of the Chinese government. U.S. Attorney Breon Peace announced the indictment Monday, saying the site was operated by China's Ministry of Public Security to target pro-democracy activists and other Chinese dissidents in the U.S.
On at least one occasion, an official with the Chinese National Police directed one of the defendants, a U.S. citizen who worked at the secret police station, to help locate a pro-democracy activist of Chinese descent living in California. In other words, the Chinese National Police appear to have been using the station to track a U.S. resident on U.S. soil.
China's foreign ministry denied the charges and accused the United States of groundless accusations. A Russian judge in Moscow has denied bail to detained Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, who was arrested on espionage charges March 29th. During his first court appearance, Gershkovich was held in a glass metal enclosure. He was seen smiling at times, but marks from his handcuffs could be seen on his wrists. If convicted, he faces 20 years, up to 20 years in prison. The U.S. ambassador to Russia recently visited him in his Moscow jail, reporting he's in good health and remains strong. And in New Jersey, climate activists held a nonviolent civil disobedience protest Monday at the construction site of a fracked gas expansion project. If completed, the East 300 upgrade project would expand the flow of methane through Kinder Morgan's aging Tennessee gas pipeline. Among those detained by police at Monday's protest was Paula Rogovin, a longtime environmentalist and peace activist who called on New Jersey's Democratic Governor Phil Murphy to cancel the project.
Governor Murphy! You promised environmental justice. You promised clean air, clean water. And what do? You allow this lousy compressor station to be built. You allow pipelines.
You're under arrest. Come on.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, a Democracy Now! Exclusive. We go to Atlanta, where top officials at the Fulton County Jail have resigned amidst growing outrage over the death of a man held in the jail's psychiatric wing. LaShawn Thompson's family said he was eaten alive by insects and bedbugs in his cell. We'll be joined by the lawyer and the sister and brother of the dead man. Stay with us. Odetta performing Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Atlanta, Georgia, where over 600 prisoners are being transferred from the Fulton County Jail after the family of a black prisoner said he was eaten alive by insects and bedbugs in his cell there last year. The family of 35-year-old LaShawn Thompson, who is being held in the jail's psychiatric wing, is demanding a criminal investigation and that the jail should be shut down. On Monday, several of the jail's executive staff resigned, including the chief jailer, assistant chief jailer, and members of the Criminal Investigative Division. Fulton County Sheriff Pat Labatt said in a statement, quote, "It's clear to me that it's time, past time, to clean house." In an earlier statement, the sheriff said, quote, "It's fair to say that this is one of the many cases that illustrate the desperate need for expanded and better mental health services." This Thursday, the family and community members will rally outside the jail as awareness about the conditions there and this case grow. Photos shared with Democracy Now! By the lawyer for LaShawn Thompson show filthy conditions in what's believed to be Thompson's cell where he was found dead on September 19th last year. The Fulton County Medical Examiner's autopsy reports that Thompson's cell was in, quote, extremely poor condition with insect infection and other filthiness around him and had a, quote, severe bed bug infestation. The Fulton County's autopsy noted, quote, "The body is infested with an enormous number of small insects that are 2 millimeters in length." Thompson's cause of death is listed as undetermined. Perhaps most shocking is a graphic image released by the family's lawyer that shows Thompson's face at the time of his death. His family has asked that the world see it, and with a warning to our viewers, we are showing it briefly now. LaShawn Thompson's death came after he'd been held for 3 months on a misdemeanor charge and was put in the jail's psychiatric wing after officials determined he was mentally ill. The corrections officer who wrote the incident report about his death noted, quote, "I have communicated with mental health staff about the living conditions of inmate Thompson on previous dates." For more, we're joined in a global TV radio podcast broadcast exclusive by three guests. In Atlanta, Michael Harper is a lawyer representing LaShawn Thompson's family. In Florida, we're joined by LaShawn's sister, Shanita Thompson. And LaShawn's brother, Brad McCray, is in Montgomery, Alabama. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Brad, I want to start with you. You are LaShawn's brother. We really weighed whether to show that photograph that your family wants the world to see of your brother's head. And I'm wondering if you can talk about why you felt it was critical that the world see it.
Yes, ma'am. First off, I want to say good morning and thanks for having me on. As far as with the photo, my personal feelings and emotion about the photos was Emmett Till. I thought about Emmett Till. It broke my heart to see those photos, and we wanted the world to see it so the world can feel it and the world can wake up and see what's going on out here and get behind it and make a change. Make a change. We want the world to wake up and make a change.
I'd like to ask Shanita Thompson, the sister of LaShawn Thompson, when you first heard of what had happened to your brother and your reaction when you realized the conditions that he was in?
When I first found out what happened to my brother, it just like broke my heart. Just to see the conditions that he was in, and especially the photos, just to see all the bugs in his face, his eyes, his nose, like, it really, really broke my heart just to see him like that and what he went through.
And also, I'd like to ask Brad McCray, the fact that the sheriff of Fulton County is now saying he vows to clean house. What's your reaction to the actions of the law enforcement subsequent to your brother's death?
Well, I want to thank the sheriff for trying to clean house and do everything that he feels like he could do. I wish it was done earlier. I wish it would have been done so my brother might still be here. But I want to thank the sheriff for what he's trying to do, and he's trying to make it right on his behalf. But we got a long way to go, and I hope it keeps going forward.
I want to point out, Brad, that for our listeners, you are wearing a T-shirt that says "In Loving Memory," and there's a beautiful picture of your brother, LaShawn, on your shirt. Were you, and I also want to ask Shanita, if you both were in communication with him, if you were able to talk to him when he was in the jail. Shanita, let's start with you. And did he talk to you about the bed bugs, the insects, the infestation, the conditions of the jail?
Like my brother had previously said, we didn't even know he was in jail, so...
So the horror of this. A report by the Southern Center for Human Rights found at least 10 people died at the Fulton County Jail last year and said, quote, the Fulton County Jail has been understaffed and mismanaged for decades, leading to multiple lawsuits and consent decrees. But the problems have been particularly acute in recent months as Fulton County Sheriff Labatt has failed to maintain even existing staff. On September 21st, Labatt stated he'd lost more staff than he was able to hire. And as of October 10th, there were at least 155 staff vacancies. The American Civil Liberties Union has issued a report on how to quickly depopulate the jail that said, quote, Fulton County's failure to count for people's ability to pay when setting bail is a significant factor in the number of people held in jail, and found at least 12% of the people were held there due to inability to pay bail, meaning a wealthier individual with the same charges and bail amount would be released. Some were held for over 2 years. Which brings us to Michael Harper, the attorney for LaShawn's family. Michael, can you talk about why we are just learning about this case now and the significance, the impact it has had? I mean, removing 600 prisoners. Talk about what you understand happened, how LaShawn was in that mental health unit of the jail, if you can call it that, what the autopsy means, the photographs that you have that are so horrific.
Yeah, good morning. Let me start with the photographs, because there is some talk from the sheriff about the authenticity of those photographs and where they came from. Those horrific photographs came directly from the Fulton County Medical Examiner's jail death investigation that was provided to the family from the county medical examiner's office. They are the exact photos of the cell that LaShawn Thompson was housed in when he died. They are horrible. But what happened here, as you noted, the jail knew that LaShawn Thompson had mental health issues in June of 2022. They put him in the psychiatric wing of that jail and neglected him. He was there for 3 months. There are reports in the incident report from the death that the officers, as you alluded to, were aware that he was declining. He was in a filthy cell. They complained to their superiors, and nothing happened. He was there until he died, and his body was found infested with those horrible bed bug bites and lice and insects. It is just beyond tragic what happened to him. He's mentally ill. He was not able, we believe, to contact his family. He was not able to speak for himself. They held him there. It was their responsibility to make sure he was safe and to make sure that his cell was clean. And remember, LaShawn Thompson was a pretrial detainee. He had not been convicted of any crime. He was being held there until he got his day in court. So they had an obligation to make sure that he was safe. The new information about the sheriff cleaning house and moving inmates, that's a wonderful thing to happen. But LaShawn Thompson died in September of last year. The sheriff was well aware of this case then. We believe the measures that he's taken now are solely based on the international outrage of LaShawn Thompson's death. We appreciate any change to keep inmates safe, but it should have happened before LaShawn Thompson died, and certainly after he died, before the media attention.
Well, Michael Harper, you've represented others who died in the same facility, including William Barnett, a man charged with stealing a lawnmower, and also Antonio May in 2018, who was beaten to death by 6 detention officers. Talk about these two related cases and what it indicates about how law enforcement has been dealing with this jail now for years.
Yeah, there's certainly a systemic issue of abuse and neglect at the Fulton County Jail here in Atlanta. Antonio May's case was horrific. This is a man who also went into the jail with mental health issues. They were well aware, it's well documented, he had mental health issues. He was in a holding cell when he first came in to be processed. He began removing his clothing, and he allegedly would not put his clothing back on when instructed to by the detention officers. For that small infraction, the DART team, the specialized team at the jail, direct action response team, went into his holding cell, tased him 9 times in 1.5 minutes, beat him, put him in a restraint chair, took him to a shower area to wash the pepper spray off his face, and his heart went out. And they literally watched him tied down to a restraint chair, and they had extra restraints. The evidence in that case showed that not just the restraints on a restraint chair, but they used additional restraints against jail policy. And while he was restrained in that manner, his heart went out in front of them, and he died restrained in that chair. Just a horrific case for such a small, minor infraction. William Barnett, another tragic case, went to the jail on a misdemeanor. The jail was aware that he had a chemical imbalance. He had low potassium. They sent him out because he had some health issues, sent him out to the hospital. When he came back to the jail, the instructions on the from the hospital was for the jail to monitor William Barnett, check his potassium level to make sure that he did not decline. They did nothing. They never gave him more potassium. They never monitored him, and he was found unresponsive, went into cardiac arrest in his cell, and died. I mean, these are just inexcusable, horrific deaths. And let me also say this about the sheriff wanting a new jail. We applaud that, and we agree that we probably need a new jail in Fulton County, but these cases are about neglect. A new jail is not going to stop neglectful detention officers from not caring for mentally ill people. They have to do more training. They have to make sure that the officers are following policy to help those who are least served.
We wanted to end again with the family of LaShawn. Brad.